mum's the word. But we're telling everyone. It's BOGO 50% off time at Designer Shoe Warehouse. Just in time for Mother's Day, buy any pair of shoes, get a second qualifying pair 50% off. Treat mom or yourself to the perfect spring styles from must-own brands. And hurry. Unlike a mother's love, this deal won't last forever. So make mom proud and score BOGO 50% off at your DSW store or DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, we are, you are, rather, in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. We're also in the loop.
All of us, man.
All together.
The loop is all-inclusive, baby.
That is right. That's right. And I realize I've been doing a lot of the hit 'em up reference of as a staff, record label, and LaCrew, but in that instance, I think it very much applies. We all in this. And it's been a fun one thus far. One more hour to go before we hand it over to the fellas of the drive who, I mean, since we're talking about crawfish, I know that they got the crawfish tour rolling on tomorrow as well, don't they? Like, am I bugging?
Yeah, no, it's going for the next several weeks.
So what I will do for you is I'll make sure to get you a proper accounting, and I know T-Mill is probably running it into me right here in a second, of where those fellas will be tomorrow, because I already forgot, to be completely honest. But they'll be out, and you want to make sure you go and check in with them, get you some crawfish. We've just been cutting up today. I'm not going to lie.
It's been a good time.
It's been fun, man.
I think all of this off of the vibes of a Rockets game 5 victory, a really good one that I think is encouraging and confidence instilling. So that's been fun as well.
They are at the Annex Craft House in Vintage Park. Don't know exactly where that's at.
It's up. It's not far from. I know it's up. It's northwest.
Yeah, they do a lot. They do a lot
inside
north.
The loop.
It is no, it's not, brother.
Okay,
and no, it is not.
But the Annex Craft House Vintage Park. Look it up if you don't know what it is. But that is where the next Crawfish Circuit Edition with the drive is going to be tomorrow.
Like Luetta. Out that way. Anyways,
yeah.
We mentioned that Nick Caserio was out here talking in various different capacities, both on Texas and All Access, but most interestingly with Kay Adams on her Up and Adams show. And I want to return to that because we talked about him talking about Nick Caley, in which he kind of did the thing that's been happening all offseason since he's been hired, which is just Nick Caley comes with a lot of enthusiasm. He has the experience of multiple offense types, and he's just going to build a Texans offense. And I've expressed probably too much my concerns with that kind of philosophy. However, the offensive line room is what, you know, the perspective has been, what the kind of conversation has been about. This is Nick Caserio too, if you don't mind here. This is Nick talking about the O-line and all the O-linemen that they have in the room.
We have a lot of players that have a lot of experience, not only in NFL, but in our system as well. So have some players that are tackle only, have some players that have experience playing tackle and guard, have some players that are guard only, have some players that can play all three inside positions. So we feel like there's going to be really good competition amongst that group. I think we have a lot of confidence in the players that are here. I'd say add an Ursary to that group. We feel as a player that's going to enhance that competition as well as play a lot of football, brings a certain physicality and a mindset and a toughness to that. So we'll get the 5 best guys out there on the field, and you know we're going to have 8 at the game every week. But you know we feel that overall that's a pretty competitive group, and we feel like at some point it's all going to manifest itself, and there's an opportunity for us out there that we feel makes sense, and we can add a player. We're never going to turn that down.
So I mean, I found that to be, it's on message. Like they've stayed pretty strong on message, as you would expect, but. It was good to get a little bit more of an understanding of the thought process. And that's not the first time, but the second time he's alluded to kind of the malleability of the offensive lineman. And I know for me, B. Scott, I almost called you Lopez. I've definitely thought more and more about how in the modern NFL, it does feel like teams are more willing to move linemen around, even if they don't like, even if they're not necessarily your prototypical, like, you know, guy that has a lot of versatility on the offensive line, simply on the idea that there's not that many of them And so we're just going to take the guys that we have and try them in different places and allow them to learn them as they go. But I kind of found it interesting that he kind of had categories within them. There's guys that are tackles only, guards only, and guys that move around. And I kind of wanted to ask you, who do you think is where and where you think Arionte Ursary, the new man in the room, falls?
It is literally the reason why to start the show, or at least in the first hour early on in the show, I was hitting on, hey, a rookie minicamp where you don't typically expect to get a lot out of. And I'm not saying you're going to tangibly get a whole lot out of it. This go around is we're a week outside of rookie minicamp. But that is where this question is going to begin to be asked and answered, is with rookie minicamp and how much a guy can absorb. Talk about the positional flex. I know it's been a point of contention, I think, for Texans fans with the whole yo-yoing of offensive linemen inside and out, maybe valuing positional flexibility too much and not just allowing a guy to focus on a position and do that particular thing, or to evaluate and acquire offensive linemen who are excellent at one particular thing and not necessarily just mediocre at a bunch of different things. Like, positional flexibility sounds good when it comes out of your mouth, like when you just say it.
It does. But it does sound. It makes you sound smart.
Yeah, it makes you sound smart, and it makes a player sound valuable. But when you get down to it, and if that player is not particularly special at either one, or isn't necessarily getting the job done at either one, then the value of that flexibility tends to plummet.
It's the old Swiss Army knife. Like, I always find it funny when people use Swiss Army knife as a compliment, because I feel like if you really think about it, it's actually not a compliment.
Yeah.
The Swiss Army knife has the little scissors. It's got a little knife. It's got a nail file. How, like, maybe sometimes you might have a corkscrew or something on it. How many of those tools would you go to immediately if you're like, I need to cut something?
Yeah.
Let me get my Swiss Army. No, you would get scissors if you wanted that in that circumstance. Oh. This is just in a search situation where I can't get to those other things. This will do for many different situations.
Or if you got a Swiss Army knife and you in a knife fight and your opponent got a sword and he know how to use that thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, okay, so now that's it. Cool that you got the Swiss Army knife that does all of these things, but what you going to do with that sword, you know? And so, like, that's what it comes down to for me. It's like, okay, I love this whole idea, concept, if you will, of positional flex, but I do want to arrive at a place where we got guys that we can just straight up rely on at a given position. And Ursary, I think, is particular in this way of is he going to be somebody that they can rely on early on, and in what way? What are their plans for him early on, if any? If it's just developmental and let him sit and watch, or are they going to try to bump him inside and see if he can give them a better chance inside, because a lot of us are not really impressed with what they've done in that way.
All right, so I have a question for you then. Do you find kind of the exercise of figuring out which of these guys on the offensive line are stationary in their positions, and which of them you feel like you can move around? Do you find that to have some utility, or would you really just want to look at who do you feel is reliable?
Yeah. Like, think about it. At left guard, okay, I would prefer that the left guard not actually be a tackle that you've made into a left guard who's just not as athletic anymore and doesn't necessarily play tackle as well as he used to, but he's big as hell, so you put him in there. Like, to me, that is just like making the most out of a situation, as opposed to the intentionality behind, hey, this guy, whether he's got positional flex or not, this guy is a badass guard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they've definitely trended away from that specific kind of thought process, because that was my excitement in the moment of finding the Laremy Tunsil trade, finding out about it. I remember I was in the car wash, getting ready to get my car wash, and I see that notification pop up on my phone, and I might have let out an expletive, and then I texted the fellas of the drive to make sure that they saw it. I know that they did, but I was like, just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case. And I thought to myself, you don't make this move unless you have something on the other side, because in the same way you're talking about, that was, even if you have your concerns, and I say if as if I don't know, your people did definitely have their concerns about Laremy Tunsil, that was at least a reliable offensive lineman. I'm like, you don't make that move unless you have reliability in mind to fill in. And it feels like they haven't really leaned as much on that. They've leaned more on the idea that let's get guys that I guess possibly have the ability of being capable in that we can also just kind of figure out where they all line up.
Yeah. So who are these guys? Like the guys that can play all three interior positions. It sounds like he's talking about probably Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs.
Which I don't feel great about necessarily, because Juice Scruggs, like, his body profiles so much more as a center. Yes, yeah. Is he passable at guard? Sure. And, I mean, I'll ask this as a question here. How did you feel about him at the end of the game? Because I know or end of the season, rather, when he, because I think, what was it? He played right guard, didn't he?
Yeah, he played right guard.
When Shaq was hurt,
I think,
I know John Harris felt pretty good about that as well, wanting him to start in that final game versus Kansas City over bringing back Shaq Mason. I think a lot of people were in that place, probably done with the Shaq Mason experience. But, like, how did you feel about it? And was it to the level where you go, I would want to go 17-plus with him at a guard position?
No. It was fine. But again, it was the exact point I was just making about making the most out of a poor situation. And he was played out of his own position because of what they were asking the center to do at the time. And it's not to get too nitty-gritty in that. But he failed at center because they were asking the center to do a lot of the communication things at the line of scrimmage that I believe in this offense is going to be now on C.J. Stroud.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to require less of that from the center position and require more of it from your quarterback. And so now that he's asked to do less mentally and communication-wise, can he hold up physically at his natural position as opposed to, hey, he's only your best option at right guard, only really because – the right guard that you have not only is injured right now, but is not good when he's healthy. That was the issue. And so, hey, he filled in for Shaq Mason when he was injured. But, hey, when Shaq Mason came back, the Texans didn't do the thing that the rest of us were doing, which was acknowledging that even when healthy, when he was good, he wasn't your best option, or at least wasn't a good option. Now you got a guy who's really a center, but at least has the heart to go out there and play guard for you when you need him to. He did the same thing his rookie year on the left side. Had to play left guard in a pinch.
Right.
And so this is you piecing together. They talk about putting out the best five. Well, by the end of the season, a lot of times the best five ain't really the best of nothing. It's just the best of what you got, and you're dealing with what you got. And I think that was more so of what that was. I would be shocked if somehow that ended up being their plan. To me, if he ends up playing right guard for you, that means something else went wrong.
Right. So, I mean, ultimately, the way that they're going about this, I don't think that it's an inherently wrong perspective. I just think that that's the type of perspective that you go to when you don't have options, which typically is, as you've mentioned, kind of in the season where you're not going to acquire necessarily. That's the thing that still rubs me the wrong way about the way that they played this offseason, is that it feels like you had opportunities to try and reach and aspire. And I don't even know that I'm upset about the way that the draft fell, because I understand that sometimes the draft doesn't fall to you in a way that you want to. And we know, we have evidence that they tried. They did their damnedest to have calls and see if they can make moves. Now, were they willing to pay whatever the full cost would be to move up? That's a question that I imagine will be asked at some point, maybe next week, with Nick Caserio joining Payne and Pendergast on this very station. I don't know. But it felt like there were still opportunities to have more people in the bucket of reliable starters than what they have now. And maybe this is just a difference of opinion, because it feels like they look at like a Lake and Tomlinson, and they obviously Cam Robinson and some of these other guys like Ed Ingram, and they look at them and they go, these are reliable starters. They just don't feel like it, especially when you look at their most recent, Trent Brown even, when you look at their most recent stints in the NFL, it feels more like you have guys that our Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, and that's why I keep coming back to this fixation on Ursary and what his role is going to be.
Right.
Because it feels like, at the very least, they have enough tackles to field not just starting tackles, but whoever is not the starting tackle. They got enough of them to have starters and a swing tackle. And you normally don't need much more past that, your starters and your swing tackle. And I don't think Ursary necessarily this year fits into either one of those. So what's his role on the team? Where does he fit in? And just the logic would dictate that there could be a role for him inside.
Do you have any, and I'm going to get to the Ladarius Henderson. Actually, let's just get to it. This is Nick Caserio, because so many people got in Kay Adams' mention saying, get us an update on Ladarius Henderson.
Y'all are savages.
She did that for us.
LD's been working his ass off really since last year. It's unfortunate he kind of had a deal with a couple different foot injuries, one that he was aware of, maybe one that kind of came to fruition when he got here, was new, but he's worked really hard. He's been here essentially every day since the season has ended. So he's got a great attitude, very upbeat, very positive, a lot of energy. you know, he was a player that we thought was going to be competitive with the group last year, played tackle at Michigan, had some snaps inside as well. So kind of fits with the rest of the group. So awesome, awesome human being, just a great kid. So he's had a good attitude. He didn't let allow what happened last year to affect his overall work ethic and mindset. So he's been great to have here, and we're anxious to see him on the field.
Any chance he crashes the party here and makes us feel better about the group that you have?
I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance, and it is for me, to be honest, less about Ladarius Henderson and more so about the unimpressiveness of the group, if I'm being honest about it.
I was hoping that it'd be the former rather than the latter.
But,
okay.
But and I'm just being honest about that, but to his credit, he does have a pedigree, has been successful, played a lot of football at Michigan, and has that buzzword, positional flex, and I am willing to entertain the possibility that one of the answers along the offensive line is just a name that we had not considered because it had been out of sight and out of mind. If it's now a factor, somebody that can actually go out there and compete, I'm willing to entertain that he could be somebody.
Just the same nickname format. It's LD, right?
It's
the same. Although, in that instance, it's Ladarius as opposed to like LH, which doesn't feel like it didn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah. LD. Yeah, that works.
I think LD works.
LD works.
LH just doesn't, though. It just doesn't. You can't get any burn out of it.
No. LH does not roll off the tongue the way that LD does.
That's right. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Thursday. Wanted to remind you that we're proud to partner with the Insperity Invitational, which is happening at the Woodlands Country Club Tournament Course this weekend. You've got Stephen Alker, David Duvall, Ernie Els, John Daly, and more. Of the PGA Tour's champions, best are on the course right here in town for an incredible weekend of championship golf that tees off tomorrow. Entry to the tournament is free, and for score updates, tee times, weather notes, and more information, head to InsperityInvitational.com. All right, coming up next is typically the time where we hand things over to Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us, brother?
Yeah, man, stupid criminals, my favorite thing to talk about. A guy wearing a retired drug dealer shirt was arrested for what? Selling drugs.
Oh, man, this might be the real cocaine curry. All right, let's get into that next.
Yep, it's the mixtape in the Loop Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Thursday. Happy Thursday to everyone out there. Stupid criminals. I love talking about stupid criminals because they be doing some stupid, you know what. So this is a Uber driver who was arrested on drug trafficking charges after a rider said he boasted about having drugs in the car, and he was rocking a shirt that said retired drug dealer. So let's go to Channel 19 News in Cleveland, Ohio. Now,
go.
This wasn't
Sorry
in Cleveland.
About that,
this was, yeah, whatever. I don't live there no more. Shout out to my family out there, but I don't live there no more. Let's go to Channel 19 News with this story.
You got drugs in your car. You might not want to wear this shirt. It reads, you see it, retired drug dealer. Police say this Uber driver told a passenger he had meth hidden in the vehicle in an aerosol can with a fake bottom.
Dang, he gave all
the rider called 911 to report it Sunday. Yesterday, police stopped the driver on Maslin Road and found meth, drug paraphernalia, cash, and three cell phones. The driver tried to say it wasn't his, but was arrested.
Put your hands behind your back.
It's not mine, dude.
If it's in your...
It's not yours.
That's the last fare I had.
I got a message. That's how we did to stop the car.
So I want to ask y'all this. If y'all were in that car and somebody did that, are y'all calling the cops?
No. Maybe I'm a bad Samaritan. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, that's none
Brother,
of my
if
business.
You, I mean, I'll
maybe
say
some,
this.
Maybe some riders might even think that's a level of hospitality. I don't know.
I would say this. If somebody got some weed or something like that, I'll probably look the other way. But if you got meth, dog, I'm calling cops. I'm putting you under the...
Oh, wow.
Under,
for real?
From calling the cops?
I'm calling 911. Dog.
Well, he had it in an aerosol can. He ain't say he had bricks in the back or something. I know bricks is not meth.
I'm not riding with an Uber driver.
Just let me out
with
car.
Meth.
Well, yes, that's step number one.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to call.
I don't even want to be around somebody with meth.
Yeah.
Nah, man.
I just can't get over the dummy mission of... wearing the retired, like, I feel like if you're
I think
retired,
that's neither here nor there. I feel like we making a little much of that particular thing.
No, but I'm saying if you're going to wear the retired drug dealer T-shirt, then you should actually be retired. Like, I don't think there's anything, it's stupid, but if you're gonna wear it, then you do actually need to be retired.
Well, do you? Because it's not like people are going and being like, oh, he's wearing a retired drug dealer t-shirt.
But if you do have drugs,
but that's what I'm saying. Like,
then you're supposed to draw as little attention to yourself as possible. So why would you wear anything that draws attention to your drug dealing history at all if you are, in fact, not retired?
It's a graphic t-shirt. Like, I hear what you're saying, like, in theory. But the problem is, I don't know that this is actually going to operate as like probable cause for an officer where they go, I wonder if he I imagine it most of the time looks like that person is wearing a supposedly quirky but probably stupid t-shirt.
I think you're missing the big picture with this. Somebody get busted for drugs wearing a shirt that said retired drug
dealer. Oh yeah, it was great for the nighttime news. Yeah. Like the nighttime news is like, the headlines ride themselves.
It's like if I wear a shirt, if I got plans to go over to the bank after this show and rob the bank, I'm not gonna wear the retired bank robber shirt, right? Like, and there's a lot of different ways that thing can go wrong for me other than just that shirt.
Or if I'm a gang member and I say retired gang member, but I'm still in the gang and out here gang banging.
Yeah, I'm over here initiating a new gang member with a retired gang member shirt on. It's like, nah, man, it looks like you're very much active. You may not have paid your dues, but you're still out here gang banging.
So there's that. I think for me, the most important part was even like maybe he was trying to trap out of the car, right? It does feel like maybe that was what he was doing. Even if he was doing that, like, hey, how's your day? Charger's right there. Could I interest you in maybe some illicit substances? You don't go, hey, it's illicit substances and this is exactly where I'm hiding them. Why would you do that? Person is not your friend.
Yeah.
Why are you giving them all of the details to your criminal activity? That's the part I don't get.
I do have a story of one time where I accidentally facilitated a crack deal and didn't realize that that's what I was doing.
I saw!
It did happen. Now, maybe I was just a little too naive because this woman definitely did look like a crackhead. And there was no reason for me to believe that she wasn't on crack. But she was somebody from the neighborhood. She asked for a ride and I gave her a ride. And what I didn't realize until the end of the ride, until she pulled one of them little crack rocks out of her pocket, was that I took her to go purchase crack. And I'm like, hey, if I had known what I was signing up for, especially given where we were in Huntsville, Walker County.
Oh, no.
I'm facilitating crack deals in Walker County. Jesus, please take the wheel.
Please tell me that this is beyond any statute of limitations. Like, I don't think you did anything wrong inherently, but we made it through. Okay.
Yeah, we made it through. Thank God.
Against my better judgment, you know what that immediately made me think of? That Brandon Miller situation. Oh. He thought he was just taking somebody, and all of a sudden.
Which is to say.
Now you in the news.
It could have been worse.
It really very much could have been
way worse.
Yeah, and I got caught up in a lot of stuff like that before. Like, hey, can you give me a ride to so-and-so, so-and-so? And then it's just like, oh, there's some stuff going down. And I'm the getaway driver. Yeah. I did not know I was the getaway driver.
Yeah. I decided to give you a ride, not to participate in felonies.
Well, yeah. The felonies were done outside the car. From the 832. Gotta respect multiple streams of income.
They do preach that these days.
They do be talking about it. Get you a side hustle.
In today's economy, you cannot rely on just the one stream. You got to have a backup plan or a plan B, plan C, all of that.
My man out there hustling, man. Speaking of, by the way, this is the mixtape in the Loop Sports Radio 610. Speaking of criminals, Len Price, who was the ex-owner of Turkey Leg Hut, just random stuff just keep coming out. I just want to make sure y'all.
Is he the worst criminal? Because it just keep popping up.
Yeah, I don't even know if I want to put him under the stupid criminals, man, because he did have an empire going on. But so apparently he paid the crew that set that bar on fire $1,400, and now he could face up to 20 years in prison per the FBI.
This is interesting because you've had fires at Turkey Leg Hut, which is where he was formerly co-owner because Turkey Leg Hut is now defunct. But he was also a business partner with the owner of 5015, which is just down the road. Yeah. And just sort of a part of the same social network, if you will, of places to go out in that part of town. And yeah, like you say, he's being accused of funding the mysterious fire. But for a long time, people were trying to figure out Why do fires keep happening at these places? Somebody got to be setting these places up, got to be setting these places on fire. And then sure enough, here you come down with a federal indictment accusing dude of arson.
All right, so two things. First and foremost, I do love the idea that he never thought, we should switch this up. He's like, nah, this works perfectly. I know exactly how this goes.
I'm the fireman.
Allegedly, I guess. Yeah, like he Lil Wayne.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. But from the 281, and I do love that you decided that this is how you wanted to go. First degree felony arson for only $1,400? Like, why are you pricing out crimes, friend?
Yeah, I mean, think about it, though. If you're going to be the dude to set the fire and risk a first degree felony, it's going to have to come at a lot more than $1,400.
Yeah,
I mean,
you got to think about it. Sometimes these dudes are just like, man, like, I do whatever.
Yeah.
They goons out here. Yeah. Like, I will mop somebody for you, man, for $1,400.
Yeah, you are exploiting the desperation of that person where $1,400 can mean the world.
Wow.
Whereas you are the co-owner of a huge establishment and the scorn or strange business partner of this other guy that's clearly doing well for himself as well.
I like how you're like, not only did you commit a crime, but you did not uplift your community.
No, you did not. You are not the job creator that we need.
All right, so
when trickle-down economics goes right. wrong.
I'm sorry.
Lord All have right. mercy. All right, moving on.
Oh,
moving
man.
On. So tell me why Shaquille O'Neal is the worst person to argue with.
Oh,
713-572-4610. So we talked about Tyrese Halliburton's dad being on the court face-to-face with Giannis. And a heated debate broke out on Inside the NBA. And Shaq was on the total opposite side. He was saying, nah, he ain't do nothing wrong. Nah, he good. And this is how that went.
He's not Giannis supposed to be on the court.
It don't
he's
matter.
Not supposed to be on the court.
Giannis talked to him. Forget
no,
all that.
No, he was on the court.
So what?
No, you think he said something? He probably know who his dad is.
Stop it. Giannis no, said something.
No, because yeah, he's on the court in his face.
So what? Everybody
no,
on the
you
court.
Can't do that.
Yeah, you can.
No,
everybody
you cannot do that.
Giannis
no,
said something to him.
So no. You think his dad was
great? No, his dad. No, his dad was 100% wrong.
Giannis was wrong?
Bro, Giannis said something to him.
No, he did not.
Did.
No, he not.
Look, right
no,
there.
No, his
Giannis
dad is coming up to him. What Giannis is his dad doing on the court?
Giannis
his dad is not supposed to be on the court.
Is
you can yell as much as you want
game.
To. He's an idiot. If you think that's right, you're an idiot too.
You don't have an entitlement because your son is playing
Bro,
to
listen,
be on the court.
Hold on, time out. He's always
no
on the court.
You should
he
be on the court.
I don't care. He's always on the court.
He should not be on the court talking to other players.
A red flag when somebody's arguing, when they say, so what, to your point, that's a red flag right there. And then when somebody else say, I don't care, we might as well stop arguing.
Yeah, at this point, what are we doing
here? What are we arguing for? You saying, so what, to my point, and I don't care.
I cannot for the life of me. Like, imagine if Henry Bibby had come up to, you know, I'm just trying to think of somebody's dad who Shaq played against. So,
oh, okay.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody's dad came up to Shaq at the end of a game and he would have justified that.
He'd have duffed him.
What yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Like, forget him. And they focused way too much about the, he's always on the court. He's on the court. He shouldn't be on the court. Never mind. He might have court access. It wasn't the on the court issue. It was the going up against and talking crap to the other player part.
In like, his face.
In his face. Like, that's the part. Like, maybe he does have special access as Hallie's dad, but you don't have the right, nobody does, to go up and to antagonize the players
yeah.
in that way. That like that part of it is like I think inherently unsafe. We should all be able to acknowledge that.
My thing is, if you don't talk that mess, don't be surprised when somebody step to you like, yo, what's up?
Yeah.
Like if I'm on the court, I'm not talking no cash, you know what, to a player, man. I'm a cheer and all that stuff, but be prepared if you're talking cash, you know what? Be prepared if that person like to step to you, man.
This is a great way to come full circle on this show, because our question of the day is like, what are the things that you are shameless about that maybe you should not be shameless about? And B. Scott,
yeah.
you are very much in that place where like, if you're going to be a bully, when that
yeah.
bully come back around, don't
yeah.
come look at me. And this feels like one of those spaces, right? And I think oftentimes, especially in sports, we saw this really get out of hand maybe like a half decade ago, maybe a little longer. when we saw athletes, or you know, fans really getting reckless with athletes and like throwing stuff at people and such, because people have felt insulated by the ways that we've litigated out opportunities for, you know, for players to do anything, have any recourse, because you know you don't want to touch the customer. Like, that's just good business, and it's the way it should be, to be fair. But also at the same time, the customer should realize that and not treat them like animals in the zoo.
Yeah.
And you know when they didn't do that nearly as much? When Vern might walk up the steps and come talk to you about it. And when I say talk to you about it, I don't mean talk.
Yeah. Or any Maxwell. Vernon Maxwell, Cedric Maxwell. Like,
that's right.
The Maxwell, the singer.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
No, he went too.
I'm telling you. But a side note, though, this also, to me at least, was an example of how bad Shaq honestly is on that show. And how much the rest of the crew, to me at least, has always carried him. And the thing about that show, I think they get a lot of credit for how entertaining they are. And certainly that was entertaining. But I feel like they also get credit for being able to have conversations that are not just per se X's and O's breakdowns, but being able to have,
X and O's, right?
You know, like engaging debates that pretty much anybody can relate to. And this was a bad example of that. Like, y'all already don't necessarily do a great job of the basketball portion of it, which is fine because we expect to be entertained by y'all in other ways. Shaq can't even have a credible and intelligent debate about something as basic as spectators being on the court.
Well, I mean, I think he has his points and he's unwilling to acquiesce on them, as you were talking about earlier, Figgy. And I think that your point is fair and well made. To take it entirely in a different direction, the part that I thought you were going to allude to and that I might hear in that clip that I ultimately didn't, when you said, why is Shaq kind of tough to, I don't know, talk to or what have you, or argue with, is because he's the type of dude that when y'all joking, take it too far.
Yeah.
Or he get hurt, and he immediately jumps to the place where you go over the line. Like, y'all crack out, you ugly. Yeah. That's why your mama. Hey, wait, hold on. Why are you doing this?
And even if they are having the X's and O's type of conversation, like, if he's not winning that conversation, he going to bring up the rings. And
that's right.
Chuck, you ain't got none. And
yes.
I played the game. It's just like, man, like, we having a conversation.
Surprisingly thin skin for somebody that is as large as he is, both physically and the mythology, the legacy-wise. Like, he is accomplished enough and is singularly great enough and physically large enough to not be as seemingly insecure as he is at times.
Yeah, well.
Side note, I'm looking up at the screen. Mike Tannenbaum got the Browns draft grade A++. Have you seen anybody in general in life with an A++ for a draft?
I don't know what that means. Isn't that like a coding soft, like a language?
Bro,
or is that C++? My bad.
I cannot stand this retort when people use it, because they give it to us a lot, but that is a reason
A++. Why
he is on the TV screen and not in the war room.
Goodness gracious.
The hell is he talking about? First of all, it ain't even an A for me. Like, I like some of their picks, but they did do the thing where they traded out of the opportunity to draft Travis Hunter, only to draft two quarterbacks that nobody is sure is good.
Yeah.
A++.
And the problem, you know what the problem is with grading anything with the Browns, is that the context switches everything up. Because I still come back and I look at the team and I go, y'all ain't doing nothing though.
I'm just like, y'all still be the Browns.
A++.
Somebody says A++ credit score. Like, are we talking about like on an international scale, like a country score? Anyways, now I'm just getting.
I can relate.
I would assume they had the first, second, and third overall pick.
That's a good little joke that you throw in there.
Can't relate.
That's a good little joke you throw in there. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Thursday. It's been fun. Coming up next, it's about the time where we hand this thing over to the fellas of the drive. We'll see what they got next. Been a fun show here in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. Of course, Figgy Fig doing what he do. Did I even mention that that was the mixtape and we do it every weekday at 1:20 p.m. and that you should send
it? People know what it is.
Figgy Fig,
they know what it is.
They don't know.
Yeah, but you gotta say it.
Now they know.
Any show could be someone's first show, and we appreciate you rocking with us on this Thursday. It's a lot of jubilation, I think, largely because the Rockets got a big victory, staving off elimination last night. So game tomorrow night, it is 8 p.m. It is ESPN, thankfully. But it feels like... Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you had to sneak that one in there.
Did I say that out loud? Honestly, for me, my personal experience with ESPN versus TNT is because I stream all my stuff. So ESPN is a little bit less delayed than TNT is. Okay. That's what I was trying to say more than anything else.
I got you. Mm-hmm. I got you. Mm-hmm. Again, no shots at any at any commentators in particular that might share a name with you.
None whatsoever. No. But yeah, the Rockets looking to try and, you know, come back from down 3-1, which has happened 13 times in the playoffs, gentlemen. And so what I'm going to do here is ask you, how many of the 13 do you think you could name? 13 times that this has happened in the NBA playoffs. Do you believe that you could name if I gave you the opportunity to? You can do it together, gentlemen. But there are 13 instances in which in the National Basketball Association, a team has come back from down 3-1 in a playoff series.
13 times?
13 times.
I know the Rockets did it one time.
There's a local example with the Rockets, even going back to the...
I need you to set your bid right now.
Oh, okay.
Just set your bid. How many do you think you can get?
Ooh, two.
You got two?
Yeah.
I think I got three.
Okay, three. Yeah. I'll set the number at four. You get four, you win, gentlemen.
Right.
There are 13 instances.
Ooh.
I'm going to say, do we got to get the year and all that stuff?
I mean, it'd be nice, but okay. I'm going to see how nice I want to be for you. Play along. Actually, yes, get the year because I'm going to let the text line play along. 713-572-4610. Don't get out here cheating now, though. Right? Like, that's not the spirit of this thing. That's not what we're doing here.
All right. I know one is the Warriors and Cavs.
Yep.
Down 3-1 in NBA Finals in 2016.
Correct. 2016 NBA Finals. Cleveland comes down from 3-1 to win the championship over the 73-win Golden State Warriors.
73-9-5.
That's right. That's the team that ruined regular season basketball and maybe just regular season sports for all of us for the end of eternity.
Yeah.
The other one, actually, it was I think this was 2016, too, against OKC.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Biggie.
I didn't have that one.
That
I
is Golden State, that one. Golden State Warriors went down 3-1 against Oklahoma City. They came back.
People don't talk about that. It
Not
happened
at all.
Twice.
That's right.
The playoffs.
By the way, Leandro Barbosa became the first player to be part of multiple 3-1 comebacks with that series.
Yeah.
Damn.
Dude, I would give you, I'm trying to go mid-90s Rockets, but I don't have the year of the series. But I feel like one of those teams from my childhood, one of those Rockets teams came back from down 3-1. I want to say
you are correct.
A 95
That's
team.
Right. There you go. 95.
Which round was this?
Western Conference semifinals versus the Phoenix Suns.
Against the Suns.
Yeah. They went down 2-0 in the series as well.
Oh, this
of course,
is, this
went
is
down
the kiss
3-1.
Of death.
There you go.
There we go. What there am I go. Doing? I got the Kiss of Death t-shirt. Just wore it a few days ago.
So, that's right. So you guys are already at three.
Yeah, the other one would have been the ones that Figgy mentioned for me, so now I'm already out.
Yeah, I was going to say the Rockets again, and I can't remember.
You're already in a great place. I'm going to give you the W for this one.
Okay.
I want to see, at least can you give me who they came back 3-1 for?
That's why
You're
I'm
not coming
to...
with the year. It was actually 2015.
That's all I got.
Clippers?
Yes.
Was it the Clippers?
Yes, Clippers, it was. That's right. How could I forget that one?
Because this is when we came to Doc Rivers like, hey, dog.
Yep.
This has happened way too often,
and
brother.
One of them games was an incredible comeback. The legend of Josh Smith.
Thank you. I was wondering if you'd get there.
Yeah. Okay. We're jogging back the memory now.
So yes, that was when Doc Rivers became.
Pretty good. Yeah.
So you guys got four of the 13. That was when Doc Rivers became the first coach to blow multiple 3-1 leads. There's two more that have happened after that 2016 finals.
I'm gonna be so mad because I'm pretty sure I know these and I'm just forgetting them. Go ahead and give them to
me. Both of them the same team. Both of them the same year. On the way to, or this was a bubble championship, if memory serves me. Western Conference, first round, Nuggets over the Jazz. They went down 3-1. And in game 7, Jokic hit a go-ahead hook shot in that one.
You know what? That's a good one.
And then the immediate round after that, the Nuggets went down 3-1 to the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
And they came back in that one as well. Yes, 8-3-2. Any team Doc went against is a correct answer in this one. And
you
that
got a handful of those,
multiple
man.
Ones. So yes.
So the answer actually turned out to be Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers is the answer. Like it just get who play. Who did Doc Rivers' team play against? Some other ones in there. 2016 Suns came back for, over the Lakers, or 2006 rather. Suns came back from down 3-1 versus the Lakers. 2003 the Pistons came back from down 3-1 versus the Magic in the first round.
Okay.
And then there was a 97 Heat versus the Knicks.
Oh, those were great.
And then now we go way further back. The 1981 Celtics came back from down 3-1 to the Sixers, and they eventually won the finals that year in 81. 79. It was Bullets over Spurs.
I should have had that in the Celtics finals. One because I've been watching that Bill Simmons documentary, and they covered that.
That's right.
Yeah, I should have had that one.
And then, no, 832, not Portland, Philadelphia in 77. That was probably 90. You might have been, you're thinking maybe 68, maybe? Celtics over Sixers? I don't know. And then 70, when the Lakers came back over the Suns, and the Lakers later reached the finals.
It's funny, that bubble one that you mentioned is more so memorable for the back and forth that Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray had as opposed to the 3-1. Like, when I think back to that series, I just think about how crazy those two dudes went off, not necessarily the 3-1 comeback. So that's a good refresher.
So yeah, those are some of the successful ones. The most recent ones that have happened in the playoffs, 2020, but it was done twice by the Nuggets. The Rockets only need to do it once to continue on in the NBA playoffs, and they continue with that quest on Friday. So yeah. I thought that was a fun thing to look at.